It's all about your health, your wellness. Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Get healthier, get fit, eat better, have a richer quality of life. Health on the go. Staying well with Melanie Cole, MS.
Is that theory that antiperspirants and breast cancer have a link, or deodorants and breast cancer? And what are some of the new treatments going on out there today in the breast cancer world? My guest is Dr. Linnea Chapp. She's a highly respected specialist in breast cancer from the Beverly Hills Cancer Center. So, Dr. Chapp, tell us a little bit about this link between antiperspirant and deodorants and breast cancer.
Okay, well, thus far there really is no direct link between deodorants, antiperspirants causing breast cancer. You know, both the National Cancer Institute as well as the Federal Drug Administration have, you know, clearly stated that there is no conclusive evidence, you know, linking the use of underarm antiperspirants or deodorants with the development of breast cancer. You know, there are some studies out there that, you know, are not the greatest, you know, one suggestive of potentially a link, but others that are much larger that have looked at this issue have not found any causal link. So in my own practice, in terms of talking to patients, you know, I really do not dissuade them from using antiperspirants.
Okay, that's really good to hear, because Dr. Chapp, we, you know, have been hearing about this for years, and I must say it stopped me from using deodorants, and those all natural ones, well, they really don't work very well.
Oh, I know they don't. You go to Trader Joe's and you get the Crystal or whatever it is, and you just end up smelling.
So now what about, I mean, the parabens that are in some of these products, and they have the estrogen-like properties, and we know estrogen grows things, and certainly, you know, we worry about even soy in breast cancer and such. So do we worry about that, the parabens in there?
Well, again, that would be purely theoretical.
Okay.
I mean, there's no direct causal link. You know, I mean, there's so many things that are out there that get women, unfortunately, extraordinarily concerned about their risk. For example, and this is a segue, you know, off of the use of deodorants, but, you know, there was a book published by two men about, you know, underwire bras leading to the development of breast cancer because they're squeezing in all the toxins, which is completely unfounded. So unfortunately, some of this, these fallacies get, you know, wide media press, and I think really cause undue concern for women.
So now let's talk about breast cancer in general. So Dr. Chapp, we think about, you know, giving ourselves self-exams, mammograms. Do you recommend women give ourselves self-exams every couple months or so?
Yes, I do. You know, I mean, the data is conflicting, and that, you know, some studies have shown that really there is no increased survival in terms of breast cancer. But in my own practice, I have many women, particularly young women, who found it themselves, you know, where potentially, you know, mammography is not as useful in somebody who, for example, is at like the late, you know, less than the age of 50, where the breast density is very high. And mammography arguably not as useful. So I really think that, you know, breast self-examination, particularly in younger women, about 10 days after their period has ended, I think is definitely should be a part of their routine.
And what about mammography? Now, if you have particularly dense breast tissue, I know my doctors were surprised that I had never found some sort of cyst or something earlier than I did this just last year. I'm 48 years old. So does mammography, is that accurate? Do you prefer other ways of looking?
Well, I mean, currently, you know, mammography is the standard, you know, and digital mammography, I think, has added a benefit in terms of being more accurate for women who have dense breast tissue. So particularly young women, the breast tissue is dense, so it's harder to detect things. And I think that the digital mammography has definitely been an advance. And there are other things that are still investigational in terms of particular what we call molecular mammography, and some of these may actually be more accurate in the future. But currently, standard mammography, there's about a 15% what we call false negative in terms of, you know, detecting a patient who has breast cancer. Now, MRI is out there, MRI imaging, but extraordinarily expensive, about $4,000 per exam. So certainly something not feasible in our economy to do as a screening test, and many false positives as well, which leads to undue anxiety and unnecessary biopsies.
Well, nothing worse than that period that you sit there after your mammography waiting to hear if you have to go have a diagnostic mammogram, which is not paid for by insurance quite as well. So, you know, waiting to make sure that everything is good and clear or that they don't need to retake your pictures. So now what's going on in the world of breast cancer today? There's so many pink everywhere and there's so many, you know, research foundations here and there. Is it looking up or is this something that's just kind of ongoing? Is it, you know, are we having hope that this is something we're catching earlier and the treatments are better?
Oh, clearly. I mean, I've been doing this for over 15 years, and the changes that have been made with breast cancer are extraordinarily better, you know, in terms of earlier detection, patient awareness, and the treatments that we have for breast cancer have come a long way. Recently, there is a drug. It has not yet been FDA approved, but we're very hopeful it will get approval in the first quarter of 2013, which is essentially what we would maybe refer to in layman's terms as a smart bomb. If you look at all patients with breast cancer, approximately 20% of them are overproducing a particular protein called HER2-NU, which 15 years ago was almost a death sentence. It was associated with an extremely poor prognosis, but over the last decade, we've seen an overwhelming development of therapies for these particular patients where we really have drastically changed the biology and outcome of these patients. But typically, it's been used with an antibody called Herceptin, which is targeted, goes directly to this protein, but needs to be given in combination with chemotherapy, so you're still getting the chemotherapy side effects. A recent drug that we're looking at, and again should be approved, is referred to as TDM1, which actually is what we refer to as an antibody conjugate, and that the Herceptin, the antibody, is actually attached or linked to the chemotherapy. So it delivers the chemotherapy directly to the cancer cell, releases the chemotherapy inside the cancer cell so that the other tissues are actually spared. I mean, a phenomenal drug.
Wow.
Minimal side effects. So it's extremely exciting.
And this is this TDMI, this is approved, an FDA-approved drug already, or is it in
clinical trial? Not yet.
I
would be floored if it's not. I mean, we're really hoping and I think pretty confident that the FDA will give it approval in the beginning of 2013.
Now, are women still having to get radical mastectomies? And what do you think about finding out if you have the BRCA gene, you know, and then the prophylactic things going around out there today?
Well, I think as far as the genetic testing, we know that approximately 5 to 8% of patients with breast cancer are harboring a mutation of a particular gene referred to as BRCA1 or BRCA2. So relatively small percentage, and it's really the role of the oncologist or hopefully a well-trained internist to do a very careful family history in terms of whether or not that testing should be done. So women who are diagnosed at a very early age, say less than the age of 40, if they have had breast cancer on both sides, a strong family medical history, and also if they're of Ashkenazi Jewish heritage, would be links or warning signs that patient may be harboring that gene, which should then be tested. And if they are found to have a mutation of one of these genes, we know that they have an extremely higher chance of a new breast cancer on the other side, as well as a 40 to 60% risk of ovarian cancer.
Well, and the hope is good and the treatment's out there. You know, she's talking, Dr. Linnea Chapp, talking about so many of the great treatments out there. This is Melanie Cole. Stay well.